But I was never motivated by the individual gain that could come out of it or being an individual business owner. That was not what it was about for me. From the start, part of the fun and the excitement and the thrill came from the prospect of working with a group of people in a radical way, because so much work in hospitality and in kitchens is so divided and hierarchical. And the idea of breaking that and seeing if we could make that work was very exciting at the time.
So today's guest is Workers.co-op's very own Sam Nordland. Not only is she the mobilizing coordinator for Workers.co-op, but she is also the co-founder of a workers' cooperative, The Warehouse Cafe, as well as being a member of Sturchley Co-op Development in Birmingham. Sturchley Co-op Development, at least in my mind, is one of the most exciting cooperative projects happening in the UK, bringing together worker cooperatives and housing cooperatives under the same roof in an £11 million development. Sam, welcome to Punchcard.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you could make it after you told me you had a migraine yesterday. I was worried it was all going to fall apart at the last minute.
Oh no. I wouldn't have missed this.
So yeah, first little warm-up question is obviously you work in a cooperative, workers.co-op. How often do you have to explain what a worker co-op is? I know I have to do it all the time.
Yeah, I also have to do it all the time. I would say that it's quite generation based. So when I'm speaking to friends or people who are younger, I feel like even if they haven't heard specifically about a worker co-op, they might be more familiar with the concept or the idea. Whereas when I'm talking to family, I kind of have to be like, you know, the big co-op supermarket, or talk about employee-owned businesses as a sort of way to, yeah, relate the concept.
I mean, it sounds like you surround yourself with more co-op-y people than I do. I've described to everybody. So yeah, in your own words, for somebody who's maybe listening who doesn't know what a workers' co-op is, could you explain what it is?
In my mind, a workers' co-op is a business that is run by a group of people that work for the business rather than by their management, or the profit made normally stays within the business or is distributed back to the people who created that money in the first place, or put into some kind of community project in line with that co-op's like values and principles. It's normally a non-hierarchical collective. And also the other main thing that I would say is that it's a group of people working together who have a common aim.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning. What were some of your, not quite birth, but what were some of your formative political experiences that kind of paved the way for you to get into co-ops?
Yeah, I would say I came into co-ops quite late, relative to the other kind of things that I've been involved with. So I guess from a young age, lucky to have a mum who brought me up being quite aware of gender and the struggles of being a woman in the world. You know, things like she gave me and my sister gender neutral names, or yeah, we talked about a lot of stuff at home together. So, and that was really nice. And she didn't go to university or anything, so that definitely gave me that perspective. But then I did a degree in London around the time of the student movement, and that definitely had a big impact on what I was surrounded by and involved in at that time. The other main thing I would say is, between my second and my third years of studying, I worked in Madrid and Spain, and it was the time of all the anti-austerity movements. So there was, I don't know if you had heard of Podemos, the like We Can movement, similar, I guess, to the Corbyn movement later on in the UK. So at the time where I was living in Madrid, there was a lot of movements around civil participation and democratic assemblies and neighborhood assemblies and neighborhood forums and all of that stuff. So that really opened my eyes to like a thriving, engaged, like what can you do with where you live, like urban politics.
So I actually also spent a year in Spain, but in Valencia. I mean, I was so unpolitical at the time that I didn't really know what was going on. I remember I came across Antifa, and that was the first time I'd ever come across it, and I was quite surprised. They had like a community garden, and I wouldn't say it like politicized me, but I was curious. I was kind of like, oh, what's this? Why don't we have this in the UK? I mean, obviously we don't have as much of a history with kind of blatant fascism as
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Spain and Italy. You mentioned to me, it was around the time of the sort of the M15, was it called? I
Yeah,
mean,
so there was the movement of the squares, Quince M, like translates to the 15M movement, and it was very linked into Pablo Iglesias running and the, as I mentioned, the Podemos political party that was trying to focus on like super grassroots democracy at a very local level. And I had a local bookshop called Traficantes de Sueños, which is a worker co-op, And it was the first example of a business being run for like popular education. And they had a lot of like free or low cost, like anti-university courses, and they focused a lot on cooperation. So that was also a turning point for me.
And is that still going? Do you know?
It is still going. They also have an editorial. I think they publish books. Yeah, it's a big project.
What was some of your work kind of life before co-ops, when you were under the thumb of capitalism?
One of my main jobs was working as a language teacher, so teaching English as a second language, both in England and in Spain. And then I was just doing retail and hospitality shifts, catering agency work. So it was pretty dire. I struggled quite a bit after finishing university in applying for like very competitive jobs in London, but the cost of living was so high and it was so hard going through brutal job interview, like very competitive. So that was a challenge. And then after I moved to Birmingham, I was gradually able to pick up through being involved in different social movements, some like freelance work I did some work with the Youth Strike for Climate in Birmingham, and then for the mass non-payment campaign Don't Pay, and from there managed to work for Workers' Co-op, where I am now.
When you kind of got into the climate stuff, was that through doing voluntary, I guess, activism, and then you then found some paid roles through that?
Yeah, pretty much. It was around the same time as setting up the Warehouse Cafe. The home for that was in the warehouse building, which is owned by Birmingham Friends of the Earth. And so they rented out their spaces to different youth groups, and I did voluntary work. And then there was some need for some paid facilitation, and I picked that up.
Was it the climate movement that was your gateway to cooperatives then? Like, when did you first hear about cooperatives?
No, I wouldn't say that that was the gateway. I first heard about co-ops through meeting people that worked in Birmingham Black Foundry in Birmingham. I didn't live in Birmingham at the time, but I was like, wow, this is a business in line with a lot of my like personal values and beliefs. After befriending them and spending years around them, became convinced about the benefits personally, but also socially for worker co-ops.
And what was your draw to Birmingham? How come you ended up in Birmingham?
It was honestly purely random. I was living in Brighton at the time, where I was from, and I wanted to change.
Yeah, fair. And then did you move straight into Gung Ho Housing Co-op?
Not straight into. So I was living in Birmingham for a while and had heard about Gung Ho Housing Co-op. A vacancy came up, so I applied for it and joined Radical Roots through living in Gung Ho. As we'll come on to talk about with actually co-op development, that was also how I became involved in that.
Between what years and what year were you living at Gung Ho?
I think I want to say 2017 and 2019.
Similar years to when I was at Greenwood. So potentially we ended up at a Radical Roots together and we didn't know.
That's why you're so familiar.
potentially. So were there any kind of takeaways that you feel like you got out of living in a housing co-op? I guess that was your first experience of being in a cooperative as well. Obviously, you'd seen the Bike Foundry from the outside. You've been in kind of activist movements, which obviously still have some of that within them, but first time being in officially a member.
Well, it was just so great from living in shared houses with landlords to be able to decorate in my room and have like control over where I lived in that sense. So it's just a little things that make a big difference. But in terms of takeaways, I think one thing is like making sure it's a very small housing co-op, so there's 5 bedrooms, so 5 members. Having a mix of people of like personality types, of people with different skills, is pretty important when thinking about recruitment or vacancies. Housing co-ops aren't inherently radical, and I think in a lot of ways sometimes can become very much like a normal house share. Obviously, collectivising housework, like for instance cooking meals, massively increases the amount of time you have to do other stuff, which is great, but I think it's also really important to think about how you can use the asset of where you live, like for instance by helping someone else buy a house through extending the mortgage if that's possible.
And then you moved on to start co-founding the Warehouse Cafe.
As I mentioned, being around people who worked in a workers co-op, I was quite keen to explore whether I could be involved in starting a new workers co-op, partly selfishly because I thought that would provide me with longer term secure work, and also partly because I was a bit sick and tired of doing very poorly paid retail and hospitality work. Really, it was through the opportunity that arose. So the warehouse building have a kitchen and a large cafe, and it became vacant and available to rent. Just because that came up, and because I'd worked in hospitality before and so had a few other people that were interested in the idea, we just thought why not? We'd put a pitch together. One of the resources that we used the most was the How to Set Up a Worker Co-op little book, kind of like my Bible at the time. So just going through the motions and the technical steps of, you know, thinking about what business model we would be and how to incorporate, and thinking about whether we were able to or we wanted to raise loan stock as funding, and thinking about what structure we would have, what skills we had and what skills we were missing. And then from there, from our very tiny little group, we helped to fill the gaps in the skills that we had. So we hired a chef at a baker. We heavily relied on the technical guidance out there and the information we got from visiting Cafe Kino and similar projects.
And yeah, just to clarify, so the booklet you're talking about is the one that Radical Roots publishes, and you can order it off their website. Loan stock is a way that cooperatives can raise money. They get loans from individuals, you know, have to pay back an interest, but that's a way that co-ops can raise money if they don't have access to massive amounts of capital, which most co-ops do not.
Yeah,
Clarify that.
I think we started with maybe 6 grand. Part of that was money that people adjacent to us lent us as a loan, and we did a little crowdfunder as well. So we really had very little to begin with, but we also had a lot of the equipment that we needed.
So that 6 grand was loan stock.
It was mostly loan stock, yeah.
How come you were, you know, so wedded to the idea of doing a workers' co-op and you weren't tempted by doing a traditional business and, you know, smashing it, making the warehouse cafe work, and then just taking all the money and hiring whoever, just paying them shit all.
Well, apart from the fact that you can't really make much money from running a restaurant or food business, I don't know, I was never motivated by the individual gain that could come out of it or being an individual business owner. That was not what it was about for me. From the start, part of the fun and the excitement and the thrill came from the prospect of working with a group of people in a radical way, because so much work in hospitality and in kitchens is so divided and hierarchical. And the idea of breaking that and seeing if we could make that work was very exciting at the time.
Do you think then that the kind of the catering food restaurant industry is really fertile ground for co-ops?
I think that is definitely very fertile ground for people to be allured by the idea of being able to run a cafe or restaurant themselves. I do think that there is an inherent deeper connection or solidarity between people that work in kitchens, because it's very hard work and you have to work really closely with people. Just the challenges of making that work as a business are so hard. The profit margins are so low, the staffing costs are so high. And unless you have the machinery and the kitchen equipment, which we did, there's that capital entry barrier as well.
And before putting in the pitch or kicking it off, did you go and visit any other worker co-op like cafes or like maybe like Black Cat Cafe or?
We did. That was one of the best bits. We were really inspired by Cafe Kino in Bristol, partly because the idea for the warehouse wasn't just about the food offering or the restaurant. It was really much more than that. It was more about creating a space, a social space. Birmingham doesn't really have very many social spaces that groups can use rooms for free or cheaply, like connected into different movements. So Cafe Kino have a basement room where they do gigs. So that model really resonated with us. But also Black Cat Cafe shared a lot of helpful tips with us when we started out.
You've mentioned to me before that disability support within the co-op was done in a really compassionate way that, you know, maybe was quite novel and very different to, you know, how it had been in other kind of traditional businesses.
Yeah, I think part of our friendliness to those of us who had disabilities working at the warehouse was just the stark difference from working in a non-co-op in hospitality, and the poor work practices and the typical quite harsh management techniques that you come across. So I think part of it is going from that one extreme to the other. But the ways that we tried to achieve a better environment was mostly through just being very flexible. So having an understanding that people might need to cancel their shifts at quite late notice, doing shift swapping just by being on hand. So we had a WhatsApp group where we could put in if someone needed who weren't able to come into work because they had a flare up or whatever. And then also assigning tasks with needs in mind. At the time that I worked at the warehouse, I was living with a stoma, with an ileostomy, like a colostomy bag, but an ileostomy bag. So that meant that I had specific needs around being able to go to the toilet whenever I needed to and not being on my feet doing physical lifting around the time that I had surgery. And that was, I think, working in a co-op where we have team meetings all the time and we do check-ins and we can communicate with each other and empathize with each other just makes that possible.
I think it's such a big part of a co-op. I mean, it is that sort of solidarity, that equalness, and that compassion, kind of spacious, I want to say. approach to like
Yeah.
different people's needs. And so the sad part of the story is that the warehouse cafe ended up having to close, mostly because of COVID, I believe.
So the warehouse cafe, I can't remember the dates now because I had already left, but it was after the pandemic that a group of people running it decided to call it quits. But I think some of the main challenges for us were the premise was very big, the kitchen was huge. So it necessarily meant from the outset that we had to have a lot of footfall and have a lot of tables in order to make enough money for the high staff costs. So I think thinking about the size of what you're taking on at the beginning is really important for the longevity, and also the location of where you are, because when we weren't on a high street, which meant that when the pandemic hit and people stopped going to the high street, it was like a double whammy for us. Another takeaway was just that it is really hard doing a hospitality workers co-op. The profit margins are very low, and it's a tall order. But I don't see it as a failure, and I think there is a risk of, I think maybe we adopt this from mainstream business, but talking about business failures, I don't think is always helpful, because we provided jobs for ourselves for a number of years, and we introduced a lot of people, especially young people, into working for a co-op, people who had never heard of what a co-op was before. And we hopefully had a really nice working environment during that time. For me personally, it was a success and it was a really great learning experience. At the end, it was a real struggle for the people trying to make the business work. And I think it's important to call a project when it's done rather than to try and keep it going just for the sake of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean to throw shade on, you know, it ending and be
no,
like,
not
you
at
know.
all, not at all, not at all.
But yeah, there's obviously so much we can learn from these different things, and you know, whether us as a network, if we were stronger, we could have, you know, offered you more support. And obviously Black Cat Cafe is going through a kind of similar thing, and it looks like they're going to end up having to sell to private ownership. They're going to sell to a family who, you know, share some of the values, but not the cooperative values.
I think that is a role that the Federation can play, or we can try and do a bit more, is talking about how things are bad or why things are bad and how we can support co-ops in that place. And that's not necessarily to try and keep a co-op running, but I think talking about it more is probably healthy.
When you say the Federation, you mean workers.co-op?
Workers.co-op. Thing.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure in case there were any listeners who don't get our jargon. If you are enjoying the Punch Card podcast, please consider supporting us financially. Without your support, we won't be able to keep making Punch Card. If you too want to shift the conversation away from privately owned businesses to worker-controlled alternatives, then go to our funding page, which is on opencollective.com/workerscoop/projects/punchcard. Link will be in the show notes. We're currently running at quite a modest budget of about 600 per episode. So if you can contribute, please do. And a quick word about the Open Collective. It's a bit like Patreon, but it's not run by venture capitalists. So if you haven't heard of it, I would recommend checking it out, even if you don't end up contributing towards funding PunchCard. It can be used by groups that are starting out with a project and don't have a bank account yet. That's where it's like really quite innovative. Do you think you would have found it useful to have at the beginning of the Warehouse Cafe?
Yeah. We used Open Collective, actually, not as part of the Warehouse Cafe, but during the pandemic when we were all furloughed and shut for business, we ran a solidarity kitchen and we produced many thousands of meals for people without access to food. And we used Open Collective to manage the donations that funded that.
Yeah, this podcast is not sponsored by Open Collective. I just think it's cool.
It's a great platform.
Let's transition into Sturchley Co-op Development. So you're going to end up living there quite soon. Well,
mm-hmm.
when is soon? When will it happen? When will it be finished?
So for those who don't know, Sturchley Co-op Development is a big project comprising three worker co-ops and one housing co-op. The top bit of the building will be a block of flat with the retail space for the retail co-ops at the bottom. The project has been going on for about 9 years, and last summer construction began. It was due to be completed in October. However, our construction company went bust, so It's now been delayed, but it should be ready for us to move into spring, early summer next year.
And the ones involved in that, so it's Birmingham Bike Foundry, Artifact, which is a creative co-op, then Loaf, the bakery, and is Gung Ho the one that's going to be the housing co-op, or is it a different housing co-op?
So Gung Ho was the housing co-op which contributed to the creation of the project. It provided the members to attend the meetings, think of the ideas and do the work and setting it up, but it won't be Gung Ho Housing Co-op. That's a separate co-op.
It's such a unique project for the UK. I know obviously it's happening in mainland Europe a little bit more. Was it not so difficult to kind of make it work, being like one of the first ones to try and do it? Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, it's been such a steep learning curve. Yeah, people are so impressed when we explain what the project is, which feels weird when you're in something. Our model, the way that we've been able to make this work, has been through becoming registered providers of social housing and accessing the government Homes England fund. I know that there's Homes for Change in Manchester, but they had a very different inception and funding model, I think.
So the project's going to be 11 million, which is like, you know, crazy money. Mm-hmm. So how much of that was Homes England money?
So Homes England will be providing half of the residential building, and then the other half will be funded through a private mortgage. The mortgage will also cover the retail bit of the building as well.
For maybe those who don't know, so Homes England was a pot of money that the government kind of set aside for, it was like housing developments, like in a sort of private sense, right? Am I getting that correct? Sort of like new builds or cooperatives or community-led housing.
I don't know of any examples of housing co-ops taking the government up on that. It's great because it means that the flats will all be affordable rent, which is fundamental, which is why we wanted to do the project in the first place.
So I think Chapel Town Co-Housing in Leeds, I think they got some money from Homes England as well.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, the big issue about that money was that it essentially facilitated some really great projects, but then it dried up. We're going to have some amazing infrastructure, which we can build off. But it is quite frustrating in a way to see these projects and be like, see what's possible and then know that the money is somewhat dried up.
Yeah, for sure. I know that we also got some funding from the EU Interreg development pot. And obviously that's totally inaccessible now after Brexit. That will also helped us to cover some of the initial startup costs and project coordination.
How's it been kind of like trying to balance three worker co-ops, one housing co-op? I presume you're all doing it voluntarily at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any paid organisers or?
Yeah, so it's mostly volunteer work. So we've had some budget for part-time project coordinator for very short periods of time. Chris from the Bike Foundry has been doing that, but that's over now. And previously, Catherine from Gung Ho was doing that for a while on a short-term basis. But the Bike Foundry have been doing some of the work during work hours. So in that sense, some of the worker co-ops have been contributing. So Loaf, for example, lend us their meeting room. But otherwise, it's just us and our spare time. And I think a big part of that is knowing that we're going to get somewhere to live out of it, and knowing that people who are working in the worker co-ops will have a good place to work.
And what's the initial rent? Is it around market rate or is it quite a lot lower or what?
Yeah, no, it's lower because it's affordable rent. So I think for a one bed flat, the rent will be just under £500. I think something like £480.
And how does that compare to sort of similar size thing in Birmingham?
I think in Birmingham for a new build, probably looking around £1,000 or £900 a month. So,
yeah, so
probably
big.
60%, 50% of what it would be privately.
Yeah, great. Bet you're looking forward to it, yeah.
I am.
Obviously, with a project like this big, like there must have been some serious challenges. What sort of things have you had to tackle and work through? If you don't
the
mind
planning,
spilling the beans.
No. The planning process was a nightmare. That was probably one of the biggest challenges. We had a struggle. We had to lose one story. It was going to be four story. Now it's three story. And just little details with the council, with the back and forth, was quite hard. Finding land was very hard. It worked in the end because, well, there was a land bank war between supermarkets, and in the end, a like private developer saw us as an opportunity to like tick their box for the social like aspects that they need to tick when they do luxury builds. And then, kind of funny, we had quite a lot of local opposition from local landlords and businesses who were particularly opposed to our no car stance. We had some misinformation leaflets being handed out about our project. So that was a funny one.
What, saying that you were anti-car and that was like bad?
Yeah, saying that we would increase congestion because of a new building going up on the high street and it wasn't going to be accessible because we're not even providing car parking spaces. And it's mostly been overwhelmingly positive, just things that you
Yeah.
don't expect.
So did you have some like funny kind of daytime TV ads against you, like Strategy Co-op development, you know, they're gonna ruin your street. Look at these, the hippies are here, the horrible lefties. Was it all that kind of jazz?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't on that level, but it was
Yeah.
entertaining.
Yeah. So, I mean, more recently, obviously, you've got involved in workers.co-op. You weren't there at the beginning, but you got involved a year after it founded. Is that?
Yeah, I think more or less. So I joined in around May time of last year. I saw a post for a coordinator doing some temporary work for mobilizing. And I thought that sounds exactly what I'm interested in. I'd actually been meaning to go to a worker co-op weekend for a few years before that. So it's funny that workers.co-op came out of a workers co-op weekend. But yeah, no, it's been great. And that time went really quickly and went really well. And I've stayed on since then. And I'm now
Yeah.
working 3 days a week doing communications work and membership work and mobilizing work.
Yeah, and I was one of the ones who interviewed you, which seems weird. Seems a bit weird now, but I guess that's how
You're
these
my
things happen.
boss.
And yeah, not at all.
Yeah,
That's the first interview I've ever done for a job, so I hope I did as well as you did.
it's
What's it been like being the mobilizing person, trying to, you know, mobilize 400 worker co-ops all across the UK and beyond, in terms of like international as well? It's a mammoth task. How are you doing?
a hard question to answer. It's an interesting model for federation where it's sort of between a union and a movement, I think, in the way it's been described. So we're trying to represent the interests and the needs of existing worker co-ops, but we're also trying to build up the hype around workplace control and link up to existing social justice movements. So yeah, there's no end to the number of jobs to do and opportunities that we could follow. But I'd say that it's my time gets taken up by all the little mundane things to do, and it's easy to lose sight of the bigger picture, but that is also what really excites me. So it's useful being in the communications working group and the now movement building working group, because it gives that sort of balance between, you know, sending out newsletters, but also thinking who could come along to the movement building group and how we can make alliances and how we could scale up work up conversions or any number of things. There's a lot of people who have a lot of time to put into doing jobs for the Federation, and there's a lot of will and eagerness, but trying to channel that and create momentum and not lose our momentum is a huge challenge. And I think that's particularly the case amongst worker co-ops, because typically, in my experience, people that work in worker co-ops have little time but a lot of enthusiasm. And yeah, it's definitely been a challenge knowing how to tap into the resources without in a way that is sustainable, and making that as easy as possible to achieve and do. Having a couple of paid workers or 6 days of paid work is a big challenge, and how that's going to unfold going forward, we have yet to see.
Because yeah, I think if you can crack this question, create a little pamphlet at some point, which, you know, helps, because obviously member engagement is just such an issue within cooperatives. Once your membership starts getting towards like 100 or 200 or even like 50, it's really difficult to know how to engage everybody in all the kind of democratic decisions that go on, you know, what's relevant to them, what's not relevant to them. It's quite easy for people to tap in, get burnt out really quickly and be like, well, this is way too much information. I actually don't have capacity for this. There's so much more learning to understand like how we can do that better.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You said it. I think workers.co-op, the federation, is led by its members, is member-led and driven, and we have to work out where that begins and where that ends, and how much people need to participate in the workings of, for instance, the strategy, or how we come to understand what co-ops want out of being represented on a national level.
But in the US, you know, they were a big influence for us. And I know you went
I did, yeah.
to their conference.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. I went to the New York Federation of Worker Co-op Christmas party, and that federation is a member of the US Worker Co-op Federation. So that's also interesting because they have federate members within the federation. Compared to us, they're very linked with social justice movements, and I think part of that comes from the fact that when they started, they really wanted to make sure that they had a lot of leadership and representation from marginalized communities. I think that they do that really well, and we can learn from that. But it was really encouraging. They started in 2004, so they've been around for 20 years now, and they were very encouraged by what we've done so far. It was really nice. And they were like, "What, already you've done a big in-person event, and this many people came." So that was exciting. And they've got 400 members, and we've got around about 90 members. So I don't think we're doing too badly. Obviously, there's some key differences, and for instance, member benefits in the US are, so I think they do some kind of healthcare offer. So that's another difference to the UK Federation. But I think it would be great to keep learning from them.
Maybe thinking about people who this is maybe one of their first experiences or exposures to cooperatives, like what are some of the key lessons that you think you've learned from being in all these different co-ops that you've been a part of?
I don't know how interesting my lessons will be, but I think just small things
It's
like
fine.
remaining or being professional in environments that can feel very much sometimes like social movements. I mean, at the end of the day, a work co-op is a business and you need to make money, whether you reinvest that in, increasing your wages or doing projects that have like social impact.
I mean, interestingly, you kind of like, yeah, you compared it to social movements, and obviously you've kind of been part of climate activism. I mean, what are your sort of thoughts about the differences there? Like, did you feel that within the social movements, it was, there was just a lack of policy, everybody was burnt out, and, this is the cliche really, things sort of fall by the wayside because everybody's just trying to do, the
Everything.
everything. Exactly.
Yes,
And, the magic of being in a workers' co-op is you do actually get paid for some of it, which is great. You get paid to do something which is political. It still kind of buys into a bit of capitalism and has to fit, kind of wedge itself in. But in many ways, it still can be very radical. I don't know if that was really a question, but.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of successful work co-ops operate can and should be applied to how social movements are organized, being realistic about what you can do and having a strategy and knowing what impact you want out of it is really important.
Yeah, it's difficult because there's often like, that initial kind of political response, which is like, break everything down and, we're going to have no structure. Whereas, yeah, I mean, there is value in structure and.
Worker co-ops can be a really nice example of things working really well, but also being radical and being
Yeah.
socially useful.
So, yeah, I mean, what advice would you have for someone who is coming into co-ops now? They don't maybe have the sort of connections and contacts that we do. Where should they begin? I don't know, who should they talk to? Like, it's a big, scary world, like, if you're just beginning.
I would say there are a lot of great opportunities, like for instance, free training, free workshop, opportunities to meet others. So go to as many events and like local co-op meetups as possible, big gatherings, things like the Worker Co-op Weekend, Radical Roots, because there's so much out there for free, where you can learn new skills and that can really help.
And then, as somebody who has co-founded a worker cooperative, like if people are ready for that step, what do you think they should do? Well, how could they do it right?
You mean starting a co-op? I would just say go visit a similar business and see how that co-op works and put yourself in the shoes of the kind of project that you're wanting to start.
And I mean, that's one of the wonderful things about the co-op sector is everybody is so happy to receive, and they might be a bit busy and they might take a while to get back to your email, but they eventually, well, hopefully eventually will. And they definitely always do it,
Yeah.
very generously. I think the key here is like just speaking to as many people as possible, kind of as you said, like visiting, but also just anybody who has any experience at all, because they'll just give you those little nuggets that maybe you won't come across if you're reading through a massive document. And I've read through a lot of these documents, they're great, but they are dry. And I think
Yeah.
a lot of the life
In
comes out
exactly.
from speaking to people.
Exactly. And seeing things in practice, like not just co-ops. If you're thinking about starting a co-op in a sector, go and visit non-co-ops and see how they do it. There's a lot of good, great capitalist tricks out there that you can learn from.
One of the best ways of pushing yourself towards a co-op is to work in a traditional business and realize how fucking shit it is.
Exactly.
I got this kind of silly question at the end. What do you do when you kind of punch out of work?
So I'm normally on my bike coming home. I use a co-working space in the warehouse building in central Birmingham. So I cycle home. I've just started playing bike polo for beginners. So I do a bit of practicing riding with no hands and
Wow,
then
bike polo. So you have to play the whole time with no hands? Or you
no,
like.
you don't, but you have to have a lot of skill and control of the bike. So
Yeah,
just
wow.
practice.
I've never heard of that, but that sounds terrifying and awesome,
It
awesome at the same time. Is
is.
there a big community of that in Birmingham or?
There's quite a big community, yeah. I think it's linked to the fixed gear, like people who ride fixed gear.
Do you have to ride a fixie to do it?
No, I don't ride a
No. Okay,
fixie.
cool. So that's a new hobby for you, a new dangerous hobby. What are some of your hopes for this coming years? It doesn't have to be co-op. It could be anything.
Kind of does have to be co-op, doesn't it?
It kind of does. It could be co-op adjacent. You want your team to be the champions of the bike polo cup.
Oh, I want to win the t-shirt design competition
Oh
that
yeah.
Workers.co-op has just launched.
Have you done a design already?
Not yet, not yet.
Well,
No,
do you
but
want to
I.
do a little pitch for do a little pitch for that so everybody knows what you're talking about?
So for Co-op Fortnite, which is end of June, beginning of July, we're doing a t-shirt design competition. So Worker Co-ops can submit a design, and the winning co-op will receive some free t-shirts. Yeah, in true competitive co-op spirit.
And you have to be a worker co-op, or you
No,
could be external. Okay,
you could
cool.
be anyone. Yeah,
Yeah,
the
yeah,
only
yeah,
rule
yeah.
is the theme has to be something around worker cooperation or democratic worker
Yeah.
control.
Yeah, I love it.
No.
I'm definitely gonna get involved.
Great.
Have you got an idea already?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I need to get my pencils out. But in answer to your question, what are my hopes for the coming years? I would be very pleased to see some kind of strategy or commitment, whether that's in the Federation or beyond, to like massively scaling up what we're trying to do, to have an impact, try and contribute to some kind of solidarity economy in the UK, getting more people who haven't heard of co-ops to hear about it. It sounds really cliche, but I think it's very easy to do.
If you enjoyed listening, please consider supporting Punch Card by going to our Open Collective page at opencollective.com/workers-co-op/projects/punchcard and starting a monthly contribution. We currently have seed funding for the first three episodes from workers.co-op, but we will need your support to be able to keep Punch Card running after that. If you are interested in finding out more about worker cooperatives, then check out workers.co-op's website. And don't be shy to send any questions you have or ask for support by emailing solidarity@workers.co-op. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Punch Card is released monthly, so look out for the next episode.